This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And so it begins amid tight security at the federal courthouse in Boston. Jury selection began today in the trial of suspected Boston Marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. He faces some 30 charges and possibly the death penalty. He's accused of detonating two bombs near the finish line of the Boston Marathon in April of 2013. That attack killed three people, maimed and injured more than 260 others. The trial is expected to be long and emotional. Today it began with questionnaires that will help narrow the list from more than 1,000 potential jurors to just 12 plus 6 alternates. Joining us now is WBUR reporter Jack Lepiarz. He was at the courthouse today covering the trial. Good to have you, Jack.
Good to be here.
So what was the atmosphere like down there in South Boston at the Moakley Courthouse?
Well, it was interesting. I think it wasn't the zoo that we all expected. There was certainly a long line of media cameras out front, but it was not. There were no protesters outside. There was one man holding up a sign in protest, but later we learned that that may have actually been an advertisement for a movie. I didn't see any victims or families or friends of victims come in. I understand there was one victim who went in. But all in all, it was sort of a quiet day. We're not going to get the real fireworks until we start the actual evidentiary part of this, the opening statements. And that's probably not for another 3 weeks.
But today, I understand that Tsarnaev appeared in court this morning, mm-hmm. again this afternoon. What did he look like and what did his lawyers have to say?
Well, it's interesting. It doesn't look like he's had his hair cut, you know, since the bombings themselves. He's got a really, really big head of hair. He hasn't been shaving. He's got a goatee, but otherwise dressed in a gray turtleneck / crew neck sweater, khakis. And through the whole thing, it was interesting. I was struck. It looked like he was a college kid at a boring lecture. He was sort of slouched in his seat, leaning back. Every now and then, you'd see him wrap his fingers, sort of tap them on his chair. Look at his fingernails. He was just appeared totally disinterested in what Judge George O'Toole was saying to the jury pool.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that jury pool. What kinds of things might be on the questionnaire that these folks had to answer?
Well, there are 1,200 people being called as possible jurors. And so this initial phase is basically weeding out the people who are not fit to serve. Basically, were you at the finish line of the Boston Marathon? Were you injured in the marathon bombings? Do you know someone who is injured in the marathon bombings? These sort of things to immediately get the people that we know cannot serve on this jury out, and then we get an actual pool of people. Okay, now we figure out how impartial is this, and then we get the eventual 18 jurors, 12 jurors, 6 alternates.
Right. Now, Tsarnaev's defense attorneys had pushed to have the trial move. They claim that it's not going to be possible to put an impartial jury together. What do we know about that for the defense and the prosecution? How difficult will it be to find suitable impartial jurors?
Well, I mean, the defense had argued essentially if you live anywhere in the Boston area, you are a victim or you know a victim of this crime, you know someone who was running in the marathon that day. So that's their argument. The other argument they said is because there's been so much media coverage of this that it's, you know, everyone comes in with a biased viewpoint. And Judge O'Toole actually addressed that in his statements today. He said, as he was speaking to the jury pool, he said, it does not, you know, if you have seen previous media coverage of this case, that does not disqualify you from being a juror. He says, though, but from this point forward, you should not discuss the case. You should not research the case. If you see a news report, whether it be in the newspaper, on the radio, on TV, you should turn the page, change the channel, or close your screen. Do not discuss or research this case as you go forward,
right,
or until you are dismissed from the jury.
Right. Now, over the weekend, a federal appeals court stood by Judge O'Toole's decision and denied the defense's request to move the trial. Could this case still be moved?
Well, yeah, it actually could still be moved. And Judge O'Toole actually said that when he rejected the last request to move the trial, he said, if it does prove really difficult to seat a jury in Boston, then yeah, it's something that they could revisit. They could revisit the issue to move the trial. But as things stand right now, they're going to go with this jury pool and see what they can get out of it.
All right, Jack. So finally, what's the next step in this case as we move forward?
Well, the next step is they're going to trim down this jury pool. The judge is hoping for a January 26th start date for the trial. That would be opening statements on January 26th, 3 weeks from today, essentially. From there, he says he expects the trial to take about 3 to 4 months. We have also heard that it could take as long as 6 months, so we could still be talking about this come June or July. But the immediate future, seat a jury. We're going to trim these jurors down to a pool of 100 or so. They'll be asked questions. They'll figure out where their stances are and hopefully seat a jury.
All right. Jack Lepiar is WBUR reporter covering the trial of Jahar Tsarnaev, the alleged Boston Marathon bomber. Jack, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And listeners, by the way, you can find a really exhaustive and informative who's who explainer of all the players in the trial at RadioBoston.org. So the trial began today with jury selection, despite multiple attempts by Tsarnaev's attorneys to delay and move the proceedings. Carol Rose is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. She wrote in a WBUR Cognoscenti piece today that the decision over the weekend by a panel of federal appeals judges to allow the trial to start this morning was a mistake, and that it will keep this case alive on appeal for years to come. And Carol Rose joins us now. Carol Rose, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll start with your biggest concern about this trial moving forward today. You argue that this has a lot to do with due process. How so?
Yeah, well, I mean, due process fundamentally means that a trial is fair and that the defendant, in this case, Jahar Tsarnaev, has a right to, is entitled to, a certain amount of process to ensure that the trial is fair. And in that sense, our concerns about due process are primarily that it's going to be very, very difficult to have a fair trial, first of all, in a place where there's been so much media coverage, so much probably justifiable anger, and a feeling of vengeance that's really gripped this community. I mean, if you just think about, for example, Governor-elect Charlie Baker was asked, who's the person he reviles most in the world? Jahar Tsarnaev. I mean, it's been a big part of our culture and our public discussion that's been going on, and it's hard to imagine how somebody could get a fair trial in that context, especially when you compare it to other cases where they've moved trials, like the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, where you had a lot of similar facts of indiscriminate bombing, children that were hurt and injured, families that were devastated, and the judge in that case did move the trial out of state, and we think that due process is important for that. And the second due process concern is the sort of rushing to judgment. I mean, 10,000 documents and an electronic database were just presented to the defense team in mid-December. It's impossible. Think about how much did you read over the holidays, right? It's impossible to think about being able to prepare for a trial when that much documentation is coming forward at the 11th hour. And that, in fact, the dissenting judge in the First Circuit said he himself didn't have the time, only 6 hours, to read through all the documents and make a ruling as a judge on whether or not we could have a fair trial.
Mm. Now, in your piece, you write that the due process issues like these in this case could delay justice for years because of the appeals process. How would that work? Explain that.
Right. Well, when you have a requirement, as we do in our Constitution, of a fundamentally fair system or due process, part of that means that you have a right to appeal if you think the process hasn't been fair. So each time that we have a trial where there are a lot of questions that remain unanswered about whether the process has been fair, it creates an opportunity for the defense to file appeals down the road. And what that means is that this case, if we don't, frankly, take extra precautions to ensure that it's a fair trial, we're going to be living with this for years and years on appeal. A far better approach would have been, in the ACLU's opinion, for the federal government to agree to a plea. For example, he could plead guilty and in exchange wouldn't get the death penalty, but would be locked up out of state, out of sight, forever.
But do we know for a fact that the defense, I mean, we don't know, do we, if the defense made such an offer, I mean, sought such a plea?
I think if you look through the court filings, I think it's pretty clear that they would have been open to that. I mean, if you look at the way that Judy Clark, who's one of the defense experts who's come in from out of state, and this is her specialty, this is, in general, the way she operates. So my understanding is that, in fact, it was a decision by the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder and the U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz here in Massachusetts who decided they wanted to go forward with a trial and forward with a death penalty trial. And our concern is that first, it will make the healing so much harder. Everybody's going to have to sit through the two parts of the trial, the first part, guilt or innocence, and the second part, the death penalty. Number two, that's going to be focused on Joker Tsarnaev, not on the survivors. It's going to be all about him. Was he controlled by his big brother? Was he under the influence of whether it was drugs or people or whatever? It's going to have the potential of turning him into a martyr. For fanatics out there, we don't want that. A far better approach would be go ahead and let there be a deal and let there be a plea deal, if there can be. And obviously it depends on whether the defense would accept it. And if so, then we can go forward with the healing, and we don't have to worry about whether or not this is going to be with us, frankly, certainly for the rest of my life and for the rest of most people's life listening to this show.
Well, let's stick with this idea of the federal government pursuing the death penalty for a moment. I mean, for better or for worse, the U.S. has a death penalty statute. So if it were ever to be imposed, wouldn't this be the case in which to pursue it?
Well, but there's a danger with that argument. Show me a death penalty case where it isn't heinous. I think, that's right. I think the U.S. does have a death penalty. I've never argued they don't have a right to seek it. What I'm saying is it's bad public policy, and it's bad to do it in a place where I think it wouldn't be hard for the government to get a guilty plea and lock this guy away forever. He'd have no right to appeal. He'd have no media time. He wouldn't be a martyr. And the focus instead during the sentencing phase would be on the survivors and on Boston Strong and who we are. I don't think that many people, there are some, but I don't think there are that many people. I think this is going to be a tough case to get a conviction. So the trial is about who we are. Are we going to be ruled by our fears? Are we going to let people who do indiscriminate bombing change our commitment to justice? Or are we going to say, no, Boston Strong means we as Americans stay true to our criminal justice system and to our values, and nobody's going to sway us from that. We're not going to let the bad guys win.
Is it too late for a plea deal, though, now that the trial has started?
No, I don't think it's ever too late for a plea deal. And I really hope that the federal government will decide to go forward with that. And if not, I hope that at a minimum, if the trial goes forward, that steps will be taken by the judge and by the prosecutors to ensure that this is a case where we show that as Americans, we can give someone the fairest, bend over backward to give somebody the fairest trial possible, above reproach. And that whatever the verdict, then, we stand by it. Because we are Americans, so we don't get cowed by people who use violence as a way to try to shift us from our values and from the things we hold dear. I think this is an opportunity for people of Massachusetts and the people of Boston in particular to really show that we stand by our values, and we're not going to let people who would do us harm somehow shake us away from that and have us undermine the very system of government that so many people have given their lives to defend in this country.
All right. Well, that's Carol Rose. She's executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. You can find a link to her Cognoscenti Ideas piece at radioboston.org. Carol Rose, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Stay with us. Coming up, in the wake of police killings in Ferguson and New York City, debating the so-called broken windows theory of policing. Does it lead to discrimination against blacks and Latinos? I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.